Chapter 26. The cables arrive. Don't quit now. Monday was a day full of unknowns. These unknowns included not knowing when the delivery truck with the cables would arrive, the weight of each spool of cable, and how we could safely unload the spools. The only information from Milos was that the truck would be delivering two big spools today. A spool of 7/8-inch steel cable and a spool of 1-inch steel cable. His email also included detailed instructions on how to measure and cut each cable and the order for pulling them across the river. While the others talked and waited for the truck, I walked down to where the bridge's wooden crossbeams, which are placed across the walkway cables, and walking planks, which are nailed end to end between the crossbeams, were stacked. In his email, Milos had stated, "The planks that are all there all need to be cut to 2 meters. They are now about 2.1 to 2.2 meters and cut at a diagonal. We need to square off this diagonal and get the planks to exactly 2 meters." I looked up and saw that Carlos and Santos had followed me, probably to see if they could help with anything. I picked up the plank I had just finished marking and told them, "Doscientos." I showed them both ends had been cut at a slight diagonal and demonstrated how to use the carpentry square to mark a straight line to square the best end, then to measure 200 centimeters from that line and, using the carpentry square, draw a straight cutting line at the measured mark. Luckily for this plank, the best end was straight enough not to warrant cutting it a second time, though I still showed how to square the end. I gave Santos a pencil, and we all began measuring and marking the planks. I hadn't turned around 2 seconds before Santos was tapping me on the shoulder. He pointed to the plank I had just marked and made a sign indicating my measurement was wrong. Carlos smiled as he proudly stretched his tape measure across the length of the plank. Santos pointed to where the tape measure crossed the line. I at first read it and said, "Doscientos cuatro," which was 204. Santos quickly corrected me. I looked again, seeing it was 200.4 centimeters. Knowing I had been more precise, I remeasured the plank with my tape measure. I showed them between the end and the mark was exactly doscientos on my ruler. Carlos and Santos both stood there for a moment with a confused look on their faces. I inconspicuously inspected the metal end on my tape measure to see if it was loose. It wasn't. Then I pointed for Carlos to hand me his tape measure. I immediately saw its end was bent outward, probably enough to add the 0.4 centimeters to his measurement. I showed Carlos the problem with his tape measure and used the pliers on my multi-tool knife to straighten it. Carlos remeasured the plank. This time Santos gave me the thumbs up sign. After a couple of hours of marking and restacking the planks, it was time for a break. We walked up the hill to the house, where the other men were still waiting for the delivery truck. I noticed one of the teenagers had been to town and brought back a large soda and was now handing out sandwich bags and straws. He handed me a straw and a bag and then filled it with soda. I smiled, since this was also how the soda was shared at the El Chocón bridge site in El Salvador. The store where the soda was purchased would usually provide the bags and the straws. With all of the workers now gathered around drinking soda, I took this opportunity to pass out the hats I had brought for them. They loved the new hats. Soon after lunch, I heard the rumbling sound of an approaching truck. Everyone cheered as the truck drove up. It was the delivery truck carrying the spools of cable. Within minutes, several of the men were helping the driver back the truck down the hill towards the construction area. The truck was stopped just short of the large pile of gravel. It appeared the plan was to allow each spool to free fall the 4 feet from the back of the truck onto the ground, with the pile of gravel to act as a stop for the rolling spool. After the driver had fully opened the roll-up door, several of the men jumped into the back and started trying to move one of the spools. They couldn't. The spool was blocked with several short pieces of cut lumber nailed to the truck's bedding. After the driver used his hammer to remove those pieces, the men slowly rolled the first spool of cable to the back of the truck. With one final push, the spool fell from the back and slammed to the ground, causing the earth to tremble underneath my feet. They unloaded the second spool in a similar manner. Each spool of cable was so heavy that when it landed on the ground, it only rolled a few feet. We were fortunate that the wooden spools appeared to have been stored inside of a warehouse, since they were both in great condition. Otherwise, when the spool hit the ground, it would have broken apart, making a giant mess. As heavy as they were, I was really just thankful no one had gotten hurt unloading them. While everyone marveled at how large the cables were, I got my gloves, hammer, and screwdriver from my backpack. I went to the spool with the 1-inch cable and, with a few of the other men, pushed the spool onto its side. After locating the cable's end, I showed Carlos where to place his foot on the cable. I was merely being cautious of the end's recoil, since I couldn't tell how tight the cable had been wrapped around the spool. After a little effort, I pried free the large staple securing the cable's end to the spool. I motioned for Carlos to slowly remove his foot from the cable. To my surprise, the end didn't move much. I then went and removed the staple from the 7/8-inch cable spool. It was still early in the afternoon, so I made the decision to pull the 1-inch cable off the spool. I made it my job to unspool the cable, which meant unwinding the cable from around the spool and in the same motion, pulling it up and over the top of the spool at the back. As I grabbed hold of the cable's end, I immediately realized it was very stiff, greasy, and really heavy. Once I had several meters of the cable and spool, all the other men started grabbing onto the greasy cable, some using the available gloves and others using torn paper from the cement bags. At first, they spaced themselves too closely together, but after realizing the heaviness of the steel cable, spread out more. This made it easier for everyone to carry as the train of men slowly walked the cable up the hill towards the road. After each turn, I hollered for the men to pull. Often they would pull too much, so Santos and I would have to grab and pull the whole run of cable back towards the spool so that I could gain enough slack to unspool another turn of the cable. After almost 30 minutes, I had to stop. At that moment, I remember thinking, this is more physically demanding than carrying stones. Since we had stopped for a break, Carlos walked down the hill to where I was sitting, taking a drink of lukewarm water and eating a snack. He was holding the tape measure and pointed back at the cable lying on the ground. I took one more drink of water and we both walked over to the cable. Santos came over to see what we were doing. I gave Santos the end of the tape and pointed up the hill, then stated to Carlos, 122 metros, which translates to 122 meters or 400 feet. Note, it was 214 feet between the bridge tiers and an average of 43 feet down each approach ramp to the cable anchor, with another 50 feet needed to wrap the cable around each anchor. Once I saw Santos had stopped walking, I looked down and read the tape measure. It was about 87 meters, or 285 feet. By the exhausted looks already on everyone's face, I wasn't sure if we had enough help to even get this first 122 meters of cable pulled out. But more importantly, I didn't know how much help we were going to need tomorrow to pull each cable across the river and up the 20-foot cliff on the other side. To me, these cables were going to be the ultimate test for these two communities. Taking my position back at the cable spool, I watched as all of the men resumed their positions along the cable. We worked for another 15 minutes before stopping to remeasure the length of the cable. This time it measured 120 meters, meaning only a couple of more turns were needed for this first run of cable. However, two more 122 meter pulls were needed from this spool since the bridge design now called for 3 1-inch cables, one for each handrail and one in the center of the walking platform. We pulled a little extra cable from the spool before we rechecked the measurement. We made sure the tape measure was placed directly beside the cable for its entire length. Once we were comfortable with the 122 meter mark, we prepared the cable for cutting. Thankfully, Milos had included cable cutting instructions in his email sent a few days before I left. After reading over them, I had gone and purchased a pair of cutting pliers and a small roll of steel tie wire. Per Milos's instructions, I cut a small piece of the tie wire and wrapped it once around the cable, then tightly twisted the ends together with my pliers. Since I had a full roll, I installed two pieces of tie wire on each side of the cut mark, just in case one broke during the cutting of the cable. I wasn't taking any chances of the cable fraying after it was cut. Satisfied I had installed the tie wires correctly, I got the hacksaw and installed one of the new blades. Starting to saw on the steel cable, I noticed the blade was merely making a scratch. I tried again, this time putting more pressure on the saw. After several additional strokes, I looked again at the cable. This apparently was not going to work. Santos tapped me on the shoulder and indicated for me to follow him up to the small house. Once inside the house, he reached into a 5-gallon bucket and brought out a small electric side grinder and a pair of gloves. Thinking back, Milos had mentioned in his email something about cutting the cable with a side grinder. The only problem was, this house had no electricity. Santos read the question mark on my face and did a great job in conveying that the Alcaldía would be bringing a generator tomorrow morning. In fact, after I reviewed Milos's email on my phone, he had included this bit of information. But an immediate problem I now saw was that the cutting disc on the grinder was really worn, and there weren't any more discs in the bucket. Solving one problem always seemed to lead to another. With the question of how we were going to cut the steel cable now answered, Santos and I went back to where the other men were waiting. I signaled for everyone to come back and start dragging out a run of the 7/8-inch cable. I knew we couldn't cut the cables until we got the generator, but I wanted to take full advantage of the number of men who were now helping. After finishing this backbreaking work today, I wasn't sure how many would return to help with the cables tomorrow. I grabbed the cable's end, quickly unspooled several meters, and handed the end to the man standing closest to me. He took hold of it and started walking up the hill. As fast as I could unspool the cable, there was a man standing in front of me, ready to grab hold and carry it. It wasn't long before everyone was helping carry the cable. Even the younger teenagers were starting to help. Each time I would unspool the smaller diameter cable, it kept trying to kink in front of the spool. Banking on my utility experience, I motioned for everyone to untwist the cable as I pulled it. This action would prevent the cable from kinking or tying itself into a knot. When the men didn't do this, I would grab the cable as the kink tried to form and force the cable to untwist. At some point, I became exhausted and let a younger man take over the unspooling of the cable. I grabbed my bottle of water and sat down near the cable spool, watching to make sure he was observing the cable as the men pulled it. The next moment, I heard him holler to the others. I looked up and saw the kink in the cable. I jumped to my feet and hollered, "Alto!" But I was 1 second too late. There were so many men carrying and pulling on the cable that they actually pulled the steel cable through the kink, which means the cable had straightened itself back out. And no, this is not a good thing. I showed the two men closest to the cable spool the irreversible damage caused by the kink, a direct result of not untwisting the cable as it was unspooled. There was nothing to do except finish pulling out the cable until they reached the end of the 1-inch cable, which would signify 122 meters. For the next 20 minutes, I unspooled the cable, letting the men make a small pull, and at the same time watching for any kinks that would try to form. The unspooling of the 7/8-inch cable went much smoother and a little bit faster, but after standing in one spot for so long, I could hardly manage to walk. Not only that, my arms felt like spaghetti. Fortunately, the work was done for the day. Before leaving, I went and inspected the 7/8-inch cable where it had kinked. The cable was badly damaged. Six of the small steel strands of the cable had actually broken in two. The cable would have to be cut before this damaged area, which meant the remaining portion would be scrapped. So much effort and time wasted because of my inattention and inability to fully communicate with these men. Later, at Danilio's aunt's restaurant, I sat and ate in solitude. I was physically exhausted beyond what my body had ever experienced. Not only that, having to tell those men tomorrow that a portion of the cable we unspooled would be scrapped. What would they think about that? And with so much effort required just to unspool the cable, how would we pull the cables up that rock wall, which was basically a vertical cliff? As I finished eating what I could of the baked chicken, rice, and beans, I thought about Milos. He knew how physically demanding the unspooling of those heavy steel cables would be. When pulling them across the river, he also saw the obstacle of the rock wall. Maybe this was his litmus test for me, to see if I was up for the challenge. If that was it, he had won. This work was too demanding for even me. That night in bed, I typed Cynthia a short email. I told her that handling the steel cables was extremely physically demanding work, beyond what I was capable of doing, and I was ready to quit and come home. And the thought of when I tell people the story of the $10 bills, of how God was there at a simple car wash fundraiser, what would I tell them when they asked if I had ever felt God's presence at the bridge site in Nicaragua? My answer would have to be a no. Even though I knew beyond any doubt I was called by God to build this bridge, I had never experienced anything that I could honestly say, God did that. I didn't get a reply from Cynthia until early Tuesday morning. Her email message was very direct. Thomas, you can't quit. You've come too far to quit now. Well, I thought, at least my wife believes I can build this bridge. But she didn't have any idea of the physical condition of my body. I was well rested, but still really sore. There was simply no way I could work another day handling those heavy steel cables. As I continued to lie in bed, thinking of my options, I said a short prayer. Lord, you've brought me this far, and now I'm ready to give up. What do you want me to do? I need an answer. Then I sat up and reread Cynthia's email. It was at least comforting to know she believed in me. I reached for the book, Build a Bridge and Get Over It. I still had the last chapter to read and thought, if I'm going home today, I might as well be able to say I had finished something. Strangely, the bookmark was still marking chapter 7. I quickly turned the pages to the beginning of chapter 8. And stopped and stared in almost disbelief at the chapter's title. I was stunned, for right there before my very eyes, the answer to my prayer, don't quit now. I know without a doubt this was God's answer to my prayer. Not only that, He even provided me the motivation I needed with the last statement in the book. The bridge of perseverance is the hardest to erect, but the most rewarding to cross.